Blog Talk Radio.
Ineffective. In the past year, activists from his organization
have identified and closed down 140 brothels in Buenos Aires. Maybe a law like this would work in Sweden or Holland, but this is Argentina. Human trafficking is a serious issue, and cartels are extremely powerful. I don't think there can be such a thing as prostitution by choice here, Vera said. Amar said prostitution can be a choice, but is it really when financial circumstances push you into it? Orellano defends the right to choose because she considers herself and others, women in the trade, to be typical workers. There's an entire class that doesn't get really to choose. Does the maid or construction worker choose that job? Sex workers are no different. To put it bluntly, they use their hands to work. We use our body, but we are all workers. It's not an easy choice, but it's what we have to do.
Yeah, that's frightening, really, when it comes right down to this, the land of travelogues say, the land of the tango, you know what I mean?
They can't get jobs, that's why they...
No, I mean, you never hear about Argentina in this fashion. But this is the country of the tango, you know?
Mm.
And it's a complete farce. A complete, absolute farce. Here's a little truth.
Big lie.
America doesn't have the number one richest middle class in the world. We're ranked 27th. This is amazing. When I read this, I was totally shocked.
The media tells you all kinds of things.
Oh, yeah. It totally amazed me. This is my alternate, too, but alternate on that. Big lie. America doesn't have the number one richest middle class in the world. We're ranked the 27th. America is the richest country on earth. We have the most millionaires and most billionaires and an increasingly poor middle class. America is the richest country on earth. We have the most millionaires, the most billionaires, and our wealthiest citizens have garnered more of the planet's riches than any other group in the world. We even have hedge funds managers who make in 1 hour as much as the average family makes in 21 years. The opulence is supposed to trickle down to the rest of us, improving the lives of everyday Americans. At least that's what free market cheerleaders repeatedly promise us. Unfortunately, it's a lie. One of the biggest ever perpetrated on the American people. Our middle class is falling further and further behind a comparison to the rest of the world. We keep hearing that America is number one. Well, when it comes to middle class wealth, we're number 27. The most telling comparative measurement in median wealth per adult. It describes the amount of wealth accumulated by a person precisely in the middle of the wealth distribution. 50% of the adult population has more wealth than 50%, while 50% has less. You can't get more middle than that. Well, wealth is measured by the total sum of all assets, home, bank accounts, stocks, bonds, etc., minus our liabilities, outstanding loans, and debts. The best indicator we have for individual and family prosperity. While the never-ending accumulation of wealth may be wrecking the planet, wealth also provides basic security, especially in a country like ours with such skimpy social programs. Wealth allows us to survive periods of economic turmoil. Wealth allows our children to go to college without incurring crippling debt.
Or to get help for the down payment on their first home.
Thank you.
As Billie Holiday sings, God bless the child that's got his own. Well, it's a sad song, as the chart shows below. There are 26 other countries with the median wealth higher than ours, and the relative reduction of U.S. median wealth has done nothing to make our economy more sustainable.
Australia is number one, okay, in the median wealth, all right? And Luxembourg is number two.
Read what the median wealth is, too.
It's off the chart on this thing, Australia. It's off the actual chart.
153,000.
Yeah, Luxembourg, 153,960.
Competition with the lower wage workers all over the world, as well as with highly automated technologies. Is there one cause of the middle class collapse that rises above all others? Yes. The International Labor Organization produced a remarkable study, Global Wage Report 2012-2013, that sorts out the causes of why wages have remained stagnant while the elite incomes have soared. The report compares key causal explorations like declining bargaining power of unions, porous social safety nets, globalization, new technologies, and financialization. Guess which one had the biggest impact on the growing split between the 1% and the 99%? Financialization. What is that? Economist Gerald Epstein offers us a working definition. Financialization means the increasing role of financial motives, financial markets, financial actors, and financial institutions in the operation of the domestic and international economies. This includes such trends as
the corporate change during the 1980s to make shareholders' value the ultimate goal.
Number two, the deregulation of Wall Street that allowed for the creation of a vast array of new financial instruments for gambling, like derivatives and things like that.
And allowing private equity firms to buy companies, load them up with debt, extract enormous returns, and then kiss them goodbye.
The growth of hedge funds that suck productive wealth out of the economy.
And the myriad of barely regulated world financial markets that finance the globalization of production, combined with so-called free trade agreements.
The increased share of all corporate profits that go to the financial sector.
And the ever-increasing size of too-big-to-fail banks.
The fact that many of our best students rush to Wall Street instead of careers in science, medicine, or education.
In short, financialization is when making money from money becomes more important than providing goods and services. Here's a chart that says it all. Once we unleashed Wall Street, the salaries shot up while everyone else has stood still. And this financial sector here, it's unbelievable. Because it just went to...
It shows what happened from 1947 to 2007.
Financial sector versus non-financial sector. You know, you're looking at about $37,000 to $35,000. And the financial, the non-financial.
It shows the growing gap between the financial and the non-financial sector.
And between, 1947 to 2007. And it shoots up astronomically. Okay, where the average, the non-financial section only went up to about $50,000, mm-hmm. where the financial sector went up to well over $100,000.
And that graph keeps going if they charted it further, because those people are making millions of dollars
now.
Yeah,
that was the 2007. Do we still know how to fight? The carefully researched ILO study provides further proof that Occupy Wall Street was right on the money. Occupy Wall Street succeeded temporarily, in large part because it tapped into the deep reservoir of anger toward Wall Street, felt by people all over the world. We all know the financiers are screwing us.
Then why didn't Occupy Wall Street turn into a sustained mass movement to take on Wall Street?
One reason it didn't grow, was the rest of us stood back in defense, indifference to the original protesters instead of making the movement our own. As a result, we didn't build a large movement with the structures needed to take our financial oligarchs. And until we figure out how to do just that, our nation's wealth will continue to be siphoned away. Well, I agree with that, but primarily people didn't back this group enough, you know? And the apathy in this country is absolutely horrendous. It really is. This was probably one of the most horrendous things I read today. Oh, man. Corporate accountability in the workplace. This is so, you know, this was based on a poll by the Gallup polls, which have proven to be the most fraudulent poll givers ever around. Okay, back in the 80s it was proven to be false. But this way, it's just unbelievable. 70% of Americans are emotionally disconnected at work. Shocking poll reveals workforce is a zombie land.
Well, those that are underpaid probably feel that way.
Well, yeah, but the thing is that what this poll predicts or presents, which is typical what they present.
Is
Gallup,
the right to
Gallup,
pay Americans
Gallup
less? Well,
Gallup, yeah, exactly. Gallup has been known to be a fraudulent group
trying to build a case for
right.
their corporate
exactly.
friends.
Exactly, it's corporate elite, that they've always have been.
Well, I'm not going to read that then.
Well, I think it's important because...
No, that supports their attitude.
Yeah, well, they're saying that 70% of the people, workers, are disengaged. And they don't care about their company. They don't care about anything, all right? And I just, you know, it just
That's probably a lie.
Well, it is. It definitely is. It just ticked me off. Now, here's one that pissed me off more than anything I read, okay, recently. You know the guy who runs the men's warehouse? You know, you see him on advertisements
mm-hmm.
every day, you know? They fired him. He was the chairman and founder of the company.
Oh.
Okay? They fired him, okay, and dismissed him, all right? And
the board of directors?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I'm going to read this. I'm going to read what I said because I really
well,
like
Well, let's
this
find
guy.
Out. Let's read the article
yeah,
first.
Yeah, okay. This is the first one, and then I'll read the one after.
Men's Warehouse, I was founder and executive chairman.
Yeah. You remember the guy?
Yeah.
You know this guy. I mean, every day you see an advertisement of him saying, we like to, we make sure you look good. Yeah.
Men's Warehouse Incorporated has dismissed its founder and executive chairman, George Zimmer. In a terse release issued Wednesday, the company didn't give a reason for the abrupt firing of Zimmer, who built Men's Warehouse from one small Texas store using a cigar box
yeah,
as a cash register to one of the nation's largest specialty retailers in men's clothing with 1,143 locations. In light of Zimmer's termination, the company postponed its annual shareholders meeting for Wednesday. It said the purpose of the postponement is to renominate the existing slate of directors without him. It said the board expects to discuss with Zimmer the extent of any in terms of his outgoing relationship with the company. Zimmer was seen as the face of the company and appearing in many of its TV commercials with the slogan, "You're going to like the way you look, I guarantee it." The company, based in Fremont, California, runs its namesake chain of men's clothing stores, as well as the Moores and K&G retail chains. It also sells uniform and workwear in the U.S. and U.K. As of 9:30 a.m., the company's website still prominently spotlighted Zimmer. The abrupt departure comes a week after Men's Warehouse reported that its fiscal first quarter profit increased 23%, helped by the stronger margins in an earlier prom season. Shares fell more than 2% or 80 cents to the $36.67 in morning trading. The stock has traded between $25.95 and $38.59 in the past 52 weeks, and ended up Tuesday about 20% since the start of the year.
So, you know, the guys, so far the company's doing well, and all of a sudden they're not saying why they fired him. But there's another article, which I'm going to go to in a second.
That's weird.
Yeah. And here's the other article. Men's Warehouse chaos. It's time to halt the stock. So what they're trying to do, what they're saying, they want to stop the
rise of the stock?
No, they want to stop the trading of the stock until they figure out what the hell's going on. Right? Now, Men's Warehouse were off slightly in early trading Wednesday after the company issued the following press release. Fremont, California, June 3rd.
That's saying the same thing.
Yeah, but it says, in light of this, the company also announced that it is postponing an annual shareholders meeting. Blah, 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 blah. Okay. Mr. Zimmer is the co-founder and face of Men's Warehouse. According to available information, Zimmer was paid nearly $2 million in the fiscal 2012 for his work as executive chairman. That title means Zimmer had been functioning as a strategic decision maker at the company. The degree to which he was truly guiding the ship isn't clear, but Zimmer is relatively young at 64. Since no other information has been released by the company as of this writing, institutional and individual investors have been left to wonder, why would the company terminate Zimmer so unceremoniously? Even unloved CEOs are given the courtesy of being allowed to pursue other interests or spend more time with family.
What could possibly justify canceling a shareholders' meeting just hours before it was scheduled? The notion of delaying the meeting until a slate of directors can be renominated is absurd on the face of it.
What was Mr. Zimmer's real involvement with the company? If he was truly truly serving as chairman, there is clearly a leadership vacuum that needs to be filled immediately.
What, if any, impact will Zimmer's departure have on the strategic direction of the company?
With the facts at hand, there isn't a reasonable way to factor this leadership change into the valuation of the company. Said more plainly, at this point, no one can possibly know what Men's Warehouse is worth relative to where it closed last night before Zimmerman's termination.
Yet there are people buying the stock in massive size. Trading volume was greater than four times average by 1 p.m. Eastern Time. There are investors jumping in to buy the dip. Either buyers of Men's Warehouse shares are investing blind, or they know more than what is contained in the press release. The playing field isn't level.
The answer is to halt the stock. Shares of Men's Warehouse shouldn't be trading until the company can provide more information. Anything so urgent that it could cause them to cancel a shareholders' meeting is important enough to justify shutting down trading until the company can get its act together and tell investors what they need to know. And there's a video that goes with this too, I think. Yeah. Let me see if I can get it here.
Right there.
Where?
Right there on that line, right here.
Where?
Right there. Right.
Where did I press it?
Right here.
Oh, that's the volume.
Oh, right there.
Chairman and the founder of the company, George Zimmer. He's also the face of the company. And in those commercials where he guarantees you're going to like the way you look, Jeff Mackey, this is one of the stranger events I've seen in corporate America. He's fired effective immediately. They put out a very terse press release. They're postponing the shareholder meeting. We can speculate why he was fired, but you have some concerns about how this has been announced or lack of the information there.
Horrendous, horrendous public relations. Just embarrassing. And I've thought all morning about what he could have done, what could have happened. I'm an imaginative guy, Aaron. Whatever he did, you don't announce it this way. And there are people buying the stock. Now, the dissemination of material non-public information is, to my understanding, supposed to be done all at
Regulation
once.
Regulation FD, that was the whole big deal, right?
Yeah, and I'm not accusing anyone of insider trading, double dealing, no one involved. I'm saying I can't think of a reason to buy this stock. I can't think of what he would have done to get him terminated this way. I can't think of a reason to buy this stock, and yet the stock is hanging in there around 2%, suggesting that someone has some confidence in what's happening at Men's Warehouse, despite this kind of nickel and dime tomfoolery, shareholder meeting canceling one day before action to a guy who founded the company.
Right. I mean, again, he founded the company. He's the face of the company. We talked about comparison, like Dave Thomas at Wendy's. When he passed away, it was like, what's Wendy's going to do? George Zimmer, he's out at Men's Warehouse.
And he's the executive chairman, which means he showed up for work. He was steering the ship. And to have just no idea whatsoever, he's terminated effective immediately. The board apparently is meeting to decide what his role at the company will be, if there is any at all.
How do you come back from this?
Right?
Well,
just personally, but how do you buy the stock? How can you yes. disseminate the information this way? Who's buying that stock and why? How is this information being put out into the masses? Because unless the company only, just the company, just people that are executives
right.
at the company and can't trade the stock, if they're the only people on earth who are aware of what's behind this firing, fine.
Right, so simplistically saying, you're saying it should be down more than 2%, given the fact that nobody knows why this guy was fired, effective immediately, which is so rare,
right.
it almost never happens in corporate America today.
And I don't know why he was fired, but I do know that I don't trust my money with the people who are handling this,
right.
this particular
yeah,
little this little thing that they're doing, the termination of Mr. Zimmer. I know I don't trust them. I know I don't believe in them. I have no confidence whatsoever in a group of people that would fire a guy this way, cancel a shareholders meeting, come out with no other information for the public. I can't think of a scenario in which I would invest with those people. To me, that suggests the stock should either be air pocketing lower or just halted.
Right.
And they should just halt it.
They should. I agree with you there. They should halt it until we know more, because this is, as you say, material information, and it's not being disseminated. And we can speculate till Sunday, and my imagination isn't as vivid as yours, but either he's embezzling from the company or there's sexual deviancy. I can't think of any other reasons why you fire your executive chairman and the founder of the company. He owns 9% of the stock effective immediately, other than those two reasons. I can't imagine.
And those reasons, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the reason is that you got rid of him. They made the cut. They made the hard call. That's fine. But whatever reason, anything that you can think of, as dark as it would be, you don't go public with that until you have a controlled manner in which to get this information out to the shareholding public. Because you and I speculating on this, this is what's wrong with Wall Street. Somebody has the answer to this. They know. They're watching this right now. And the little guy is just
he has
no idea. If you're a Men's Warehouse shareholder who's an individual investor, you're done.
We'll leave it there. Let us know what you think about Men's Warehouse and what's happened to George Zimmer in the comment section below, or look us up on Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, I tell you, this is one that really bothered me. Yeah, I always kind of like this guy.
Before Mike Castillo is banking and investing on one page, he opened a Merrill Edge investment account and linked it to his Bank of America bank account.
The only thing, he's right that it could be a sexual deviancy or the guy's stealing.
Or stealing. But even in that case, okay, you still don't fire the guy, like, overnight and cancel a shareholders meeting. I mean, unless the guy murdered his wife or some crazy thing, you know, I don't know.
Something that involved, that'll put a black mark on the company.
No question, but still, like this guy, like these people said, you know, you just can't do something stupid like that, and you can't trust the kind of people that would take over the company like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they've shown poor judgment from the get-go.
The Men's Warehouse guy, I mean, you see his ads every day. I mean, you know, every morning, don't you?
He's the face of that company.
He's the face of that company, you know. We'll make you look good, whatever it is.
Okay.
Here's something that scared the hell out of me when I read it. It didn't scare me, but it just freaked me out. I mean, California is supposed to be such an environmentally conscious state, right? Well, here's something that will freak you out. Toxic shock. California allows up to 1,000 times more glyphosate, in drinking water than needed to cause breast cancer in women. What do you think of that, huh?
Mm.
Yeah. Late last Wednesday, this is from naturalnews.com. Late last Wednesday, a story broke that revealed glyphosate, the chemical name of Roundup, herbicide, and Roundup again, Monsanto, multiplies the proliferation of breast cancer cells by 500% to 1,300%, even at exposures of just a few parts per trillion. My God, imagine that. The study published in Food and Chemical Toxicology is entitled Glyphosate Induces Human Breast Cancer Cells Growth Via Estrogen Receptors. And it says, there is a whole lot more to this story, however, but to follow it, you need to understand these items.
That's a little bit complicated in mathematical.
It just says that parts per billion equals 10. Okay. The study found that breast cancer cell proliferation is accelerated by glyphosate in extremely low concentrations, part per trillion to part per billion. And the greatest effect was observed in the part per billion range, including single-digit part per billion, such as one part per billion.
The itself sent shockwaves across the net all weekend. Women were asking things like, you mean to tell me that glyphosate residues on crops in just parts per
what?
Trillion or parts per billion concentrations can give me breast cancer? It doesn't exactly translate like that. It depends on how much you eat versus your body mass. But with ridiculously small amounts of this chemical now being correlated to cancer cell proliferation, you don't have to eat too much at all in order to put yourself at risk. But it's not just eating glyphosate that's the problem. You're also drinking it. California allows a 1,000 parts per billion of glyphosate in drinking water. Glyphosate, a non-selective systemic herbicide used in agriculture, rights of way in aquatic systems. Exposure to glyphosate may occur from its normal use due to drift, residues in fruit crops, and the runoff into potential drinking water sources. It then goes on to state something borrowed straight from Monsanto's quack science team. Glyphosate is not a mutagenic or tetragenic, and there is no evidence for reproductive toxicity in multi-generation studies in rats.
And based on this blatant lie, California set up a limit of 1.0
milligrams per liter.
Per liter, or 1,000 parts per billion for glyphosate in drinking water. Yes. That's 1,000 times higher than the amount now shown to cause a 500% to 1,300% increase in cancer cell proliferation. What's even more shocking is that California allowable exposure level was nearly 50% higher than the federal EPA level of 700 parts per billion. Yes, California, the state where more people are concerned about GMOs than seemingly anywhere else, it actually used Monsanto's sounding language in its official report that set a higher water contamination level than the federal government. Oh, man, isn't that a sick thing? Glyphosate, carcinotoxicity.
What are you reading?
Right here. Was documented.
Glyphosate carcinotoxicity was documented years earlier.
Thank you.
So they already knew about it. It's really disgraceful. Even though California released this document in 1997, the state was already willfully ignoring a growing body of scientific evidence documenting glyphosate toxicity. For example, a study published 2 years earlier in 1995 in the Journal of Pesticide Reform, written by Caroline Cox, concluded, glyphosate-containing products are acutely toxic to animals, including humans. In animal studies, feeding of glyphosate for 3 months caused reduced weight gain, diarrhea, and salivary gland lesions. Lifetime feeding of glyphosate caused excessive growth and death of liver cells, cataracts, and lens degeneration, and increases in the frequency of thyroid, pancreas, and liver tumors. Glyphosate-containing products have caused genetic damage in human blood cells, reduced sperm counts in male rats, and an increase in fetal loss. In other words, California knew or should have known that glyphosate was harmful to humans, but the California government willingly ignored this evidence and seemingly went out of its way to incorporate deceptive Monsanto spin into its public health goal documents, thereby allowing 1,000 times higher levels of glyphosate in drinking water than we now know to cause cancer cell proliferation.
10 years later, California lowers its level by 10%.
Oh, jeez, that's
yeah,
not going to help.
I know. Fast forward to 2007. After a public comment period, which was no doubt dominated by disinfo-spewing Monsanto trolls, the state of California issued an updated public health goal document. You can view the document here on this site. Go to naturalnews.com. And it claims it includes that the allowable glyphosate exposure for all Californians should be lowered to 900 parts per billion. Still 900 times higher than the amount needed to accelerate cancer cell growth, as we see in the study released last week. The 2007 document from California government also allows or borrows language that sounds like it's right out of Monsanto's PR department, based on geotoxicity and carcinogenicity study results. Glyphosate is not likely to pose a cancer hazard in humans, it says.
Now the evidence is becoming clear. Monsanto's chemicals are killing women. Now it's 2013. We've seen the horrific results of the GMO rat study, revealing the growth of massive tumors in rats exposed to GMOs and Roundup glyphosate. We've also seen the parts per trillion study showing cancer cell proliferation being caused by ultra-low concentrations of glyphosate. We also know the biotech industry has gone to ridiculous lengths to spread disinformation on all this, to try to discredit scientists who speak out against GMOs and glyphosate, to get scientists blackballed from the industry and to buy up politicians and members of the press to make sure there's no coverage granted to any scientific studies reporting the dangers of genetically modified crops and their related chemical herbicides. Glyphosate is the new DDT. Based on what we're seeing now, I believe glyphosate is the most toxic chemical that has ever been widely deployed across our food supply. Glyphosate is the new DDT, and it's contaminating our waterways, soils, and bodies. Furthermore, the California government has clearly been complicit in allowing extremely high levels of glyphosate to contaminate the public drinking water, thereby causing tens of millions of Californians to be poisoned with concentrations of glyphosate that promote cancer cell growth.
And what will the California government tell you now that the truth has come out? Now you know, now that they've allowed their own population to be exposed to 1,000 times the concentration needed to accelerate the growth of cancer tumors, run for the cure and don't label GMOs either, because you don't have a right to know whether you're eating deadly poisons in your food. And that's their answer. And join the Monsanto video revolt, July 24th, 2012. Take part in the global video revolt against Monsanto. Learn more about it from MonsantoVideoRevolt.com. Please go to that and find out what's going on. Man, I'll tell you, it's really a sick situation, isn't it, Lou?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
This is exciting to me. I'm going to read it because I saw this flat the other day. And this is, and it just excites me. Turmeric produces mind-blowing recovery from dementia symptoms, multiple cases show. And it's also extremely great in for diabetes.
Huh.
All right. Now,
and a lot of people suffer
from that,
including you.
Yeah. If you or a loved one suffers from Alzheimer's disease or some other form of dementia, there is hope and healing to be found in turmeric. Based on the recent findings of three independent studies, turmeric, whose primary active ingredient is curcumin, has the power not only to heal both the behavior and psychological symptoms associated with dementia, but also help lead to full recovery of a disease in as little as just a few months. A traditional cooking spice that has been used copiously throughout India and Southeast Asia for many millennia, turmeric has been the subject of myriad scientific studies in recent years. The circulatory, digestive, and neurological symptoms of the body, it turns out, are all positively impacted by turmeric, and the seemingly never-ending list of diseases for which the spice is known to provide healing is continually expanding all the time. Okay, this is definitely a case with regards to turmeric's impact on cognitive health, as evidenced by new research out of Japan. The chief physician of Korea Toyota General Hospital in Cabrillo City and his colleagues evaluated three separate case studies involving turmeric and came to some fascinating conclusions about the herb's therapeutic value. In each case, turmeric was shown to improve, to both relieve dementia symptoms and improve overall cognitive function. In a study involving three patients with Alzheimer's disease, whose cognitive decline and behavioral and psychological symptoms of dementia were severe, exhibiting irritability, agitation, anxiety, and apathy, supplementation with turmeric powder capsules for over 1 year was found to be associated with improvement in symptoms of the authors in the study. Total score on the neuropsychiatric inventory brief questionnaire decreased significantly in both acuity of symptoms and burden of caregivers after 12 weeks of treatment. Imagine that. And they added scores on the many mental state examination went up 5 points from 7:30 to, I don't know, from 12:30, I don't know what that means. In one of the cases, and the other two cases were able to recognize their family within 1 year of treatment. Consuming as little as 1 gram of turmeric daily for 3 months can lead to remarkable improvements. Isn't that something? You know, I read this article, another article on turmeric about treating diabetes, that it's 1,000 times more effective than metformin, which is the common drug that's given to diabetics. Okay, and consuming as little as 1 gram of turmeric daily for 3 months can lead to remarkable improvements.
Hmm.
You want to read that?
Not sure I can see it. Where
so while the conventional
So while the conventional disease industry continues to waste billions of dollars searching for a pharmaceutical-based silver bullet cure for dementia, a simple, inexpensive cooking spice made from a plant is already getting the job done. Taking as little as 1 gram, or roughly 1/4 teaspoon of turmeric powder or extract daily, it turns out, is enough to produce mind-blowing improvements in dementia symptoms. Earlier research published in the journal Annals of Indian Academy of Neurology back in 2008 corroborates this fact, having found that turmeric's natural antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, and detoxifying mechanisms help improve memory in patients with dementia. Simply consuming more of this favorable spice as part of one's normal diet, in other words, has the potential to completely transform brain health and alleviate even the worst dementia symptoms.
Good.
Curcumin is an antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, and lilioprolific action improves the cognitive functions in patients with Alzheimer's disease, wrote the authors of this earliest study in their abstract. Due to the various effects of curcumin, such as decreased beta amyloid plaques, delaying degradation of neurons, metal chelation, anti-inflammatory and antioxidant, and decreased microglia formation, the overall memory in patients with Alzheimer's disease has improved. Wow.
You're going to read this paper here, and I'm going to ask you, go to a great, great site, and it's naturalnews.com, and
even if you don't have Alzheimer's, I'm sure
it works tremendously well for
keeping your memory sharper on
so many diseases. All right, it's amazing. See? So anyway, this one, I don't know if I read this last couple of weeks ago or not.
The FBI lied about seeking mobile phone monitoring software. What's
that
all about?
This one's more. This one's more frightening, actually.
Oh, we read about this. The U.S. dairy industry petitions FDA to approve aspartame.
You did read this.
Yes.
About
a month ago.
Yogurt eggnog cream, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Additive in milk eggnog. It's horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, why do you need to put aspartame in that?
Now, here's the company. Oh, look at this. This is McDonald's. McDonald's is closing all restaurants in Bolivia. Bolivia,
of all
as nation rejects fast food. Imagine that.
How about that?
What the hell's wrong with our country, huh? All right. McDonald's happy image and its golden arches aren't the gateway to bliss in Bolivia. A South American country isn't falling into the barrage of advertising and fast food cooking methods that so easily engulf countries like the United States. Bolivians simply don't trust food prepared in such little time. The quick and easy mass production of method of fast food accurately turns Bolivians off.
Actually turns Bolivians off altogether. 60% of Bolivians are an indigenous population who generally don't find it worth their health or money to step foot in a McDonald's. Yay, me either. Despite its economically friendly fast food prices, McDonald's couldn't coax enough of the indigenous population of Bolivia to eat their Big Mac nuggets or McRibs. One indigenous woman, Esther Choke, waiting for a bus to arrive outside a McDonald's restaurant, said, "The closest I ever came one day was when a rain shower fell and I climbed the steps to keep dry by the door. Then they came out and shooed me away. They said I was dirtying the place. Why would I care if McDonald's leaves Bolivia?"
The fast food chains remained for a decade despite losses every year. The eight remaining McDonald's fast food shops that stuck it out in the Bolivian city of La Paz, Cochabamba
in Santa Cruz de la Sierra, have reportedly operated on losses every year for a decade. The McDonald's franchise has been persistent over time, flexing its franchise's deep pockets to continue business in Bolivia. Any small businesses operating in the red for that long would have folded and left the area in less than half the time. Even as persistent as McDonald's was in gaining influence there, it couldn't continue operating in the red. After 14 years of a presence in the country, their extensive network couldn't hold up the Bolivian chain. Store after store shut down as Bolivia rejected the McDonald's fast food agenda. Soon enough, they kissed the last McDonald's goodbye.
In deep cultural rejection, the McDonald's impact and its departure from Bolivia was so lasting and important that marketing managers immediately filmed a documentary called Why McDonald's Went Broke in Bolivia. Featuring cooks, nutritionists, historians, and educators, this documentary breaks down the disgusting reality of how McDonald's food is prepared and why Bolivians reject the whole fast food philosophy of eating. The rejection isn't necessarily based on the taste of the type of food McDonald's prepared. The rejection of the fast food system stemmed from Bolivians' mindset of how meals are to be properly prepared. The Bolivians more so respect their bodies, valuing the quality of what goes into their stomach. The time it takes for fast food to be prepared throws up a warning flag in their minds. Where other cultures see no risk, eating McDonald's every week, then Bolivians feel that it just isn't worth the health risk. Bolivians seek well-prepared local meals and want to know that their food is prepared the right way.
This self-respect helps Bolivians avoid processed, restructured meat technology often used by fast food joints like McDonald's. Did you know that the McRib is processed with 70 different ingredients, which include...
all restructured into one.
Yeah, azodicarbonamide, whatever that is,
a flour
bleaching agent often used in producing foamed plastics.
Yeah.
McRibs are basically restructured meat technology containing a mixture of tripe, heart, and scalded stomach. Proteins are extracted from this muscle mixture, and then they bind the pork trimmings together so they can be molded in the factory. The McRib is really just a molded blob of restructured meat, advertised and sold like fresh ribs. There's nothing real about it, the preparation or the substance. In fact, McRibs really came about because of a chicken shortage. The restructured meat technology approach kept the McRib on the menu despite the shortage and the profits continued rolling in. This is a very disgusting idea that Bolivians have rejected in their country. Oh, that's disgusting.
Isn't that terrible? Yeah. So God bless the Bolivians. You know, they at least they know what the hell they're doing.
They don't
want to
eat that.
Yeah, God. You know, but Americans, we stupidly go along with everything. You like this, Lila, because you eat a lot of walnuts.
Yeah.
Walnuts are the ultimate brain food. That's why Lila's so smart.
Oh, I wish I were.
Oh, yeah.
Local pharmacy is promoting memory and mood-enhancing drugs. The advertisement says, if coffee is a socially acceptable drug, then why not this? This is the age of instant gratification, with a huge debate in tow about the ethics of peddling and consuming drugs for just about anything and everything. The easy way out, as we all know, is never the best way out. The instant solution to anything is somewhat dubious in the face of ancient grandmotherly wisdom, especially for body, mind, and soul. Enter walnuts.
Well, walnuts are the same. Well, as walnuts every day, whether you're
the same shape as the human brain.
So what's new here? Well, consider the ultimate superfood. Walnuts are now being served up as brain medicine for many reasons, not the least of which is because they are replete in omega-3 fatty acids, an essential fatty acid to keep the brain functioning normally. Well, research says that low omega-3 intake can be linked to depression and cognitive degeneration. Eating a fistful of walnuts regularly then can keep the spirits up and prop up the gray cells of good measure. What is more, walnuts are known to raise melatonin levels by a whopping 3 times. Wow. Promising
relief from sleeplessness and insomnia.
So if you're tired of counting sheep at night and would appreciate a knockout sleep instead, then consider adjusting a few walnuts as a pre-bedtime snack. Want to continue that? You're a great walnut eater, so. The walnut is also considered a portion of sorts for the heart. It reduces cholesterol and enhances heart health. This nut is a powerhouse of nutrients, manganese, copper, iron, calcium, phosphorus, and stuff of a good, healthy, happy body. Walnuts contain more antioxidants, folic acid, and vitamin E than any other nut. And specifically, black walnuts have the highest content among nuts of an amino acid called arginine, which is essential for cell division and protein synthesis.
If you're struggling to win the battle of the bulge, then turn to this ubiquitous nut for help. Walnuts are full of healthy lean protein, polysaturated fats, and are a powerhouse of polyphenols. Walnuts are easy to incorporate in the daily diet. If eating an ounce of nuts a day is not your thing, however, then throw them in your oats, salads, pasta, and rice dishes, or discover and share new wholesome ways of eating this delicious nut. It's reasonable to assume that a healthy diet is medicine for the body and soul. Your ticket to health haven and all things considered is in your own hands. The term food pharmacy is actually a reference to a real thing. The well-endowed kitchen pantry that has healing foods as a matter of course with answers to many ailments, not just the common cold. If you are not a serious snacker, better become one and give the medicine corporations a run for their money.
There you go. So eat plenty of walnuts, folks. And you can check that article out on naturalnews.com.
Oh, I'm glad I'm eating something that's good for me.
Yeah, well, you know that's very, very good. Oh, we'll end with this one because this was a freaky one. This one's about the three sinister reasons why you're addicted to junk food. Okay? Okay? Three sinister reasons. Okay? Everybody wants to eat healthy. Eventually, when we finally get around to it, come on, how hard can it really be to give up junk food?
Oh, it's hard.
Yeah. And the reason is because as easy as kicking it, about as easy as kicking heroin, it turns out.
Mm-hmm.
The garbage we cram into our bodies is in every bit as addictive as any controlled substance, and food companies have been playing us as slobbering addicts for as long as we've been alive. Number three, companies already...
Well, we haven't had one and two.
No, but they go 3, 2, 1.
Oh.
Okay. Third, number three is the companies already think of you as a junkie. Okay. And while nobody ever binges on boiled carrots and Brussels sprouts, potato chips are described as the perfect addictive food.
Oh, and I'm addicted to that.
I know. Essentially the nutritional equivalent of a speedball. Why? Because we were deliberately designed that way. When you first pop a chip in your mouth, the coating of salt and fat light up the brain pleasure centers like a Christmas tree. The starch in the potato chip, cause the same glucose spice as sugar, but is absorbed into a bloodstream more quickly. Like spike, that spike immediately dips, making you want another potato chip.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can just keep eating them, and because there's no real substance to them, your stomach never gets full. And the reasoning behind the you can't eat just one mantra is pretty much the same reason as you can't be a casual meth user. Okay? The addictive quality of food isn't something incidental that companies just happen to benefit from. They're aware of the phenomenon, and they've been playing the market in the exact same way drug pushers do. Within Coca-Cola, the 20% of customers who drink 80% of their product are actually known as heavy users.
Oh, God.
And the company has made its mission to specifically target them. And the goal has always been to get you more addicted. They're basically drug-dealing supervillains from Michael Bay's movie, only better written. Okay. And then number two, most healthy foods are packed with hidden crap. Okay. Food companies have been dumping sugar into absolutely everything you eat.
Like ketchup.
Yeah, from yogurt to wheat bread. And it's not only junk food binge eaters that are getting addicted. It's anyone who doesn't have their own vegetable patch and private herd of steers. 80% of food sold in America is processed with sugar. And processed sugar has 56 different names. So even if you're deliberately trying to avoid processed sugar, odds are you won't even know you're buying it unless you write it down. Galactose and Rapaduro. Rapaduro, what the frig is that?
I have no idea.
Some flashcards and quiz yourself like you're studying for the goddamn MCATs. That's funny. All right.
Okay.
And even if something doesn't taste sweet, it can still be packed with chemicals that your body will immediately turn into sugar.
Mm.
And taking that junk out makes everything taste like bullshit to us, because our taste buds have been numbed with salt and sugar our entire lives.
Mm.
One journalist describes the taste of sugar and salt-free Kellogg's cornflakes as like trying to eat his own fillings.
cornflakes.
The kind of food that seems like it's barely any sugar to begin with.
But at least you're avoiding high fructose corn syrup.
The most common food of processed sweeteners in the bane of anybody nominally interested in wellness, right? Good luck with that. Neuroscientists recently observed that exposing lab rats to high fructose corn syrup brought about behavioral changes similar to those produced by addictive drugs like cocaine. Somewhere out there, Mrs. Butterworth is sitting languidly at a mahogany desk, slowly dunking her face into a giant vat of syrup. Well, push it through a little flask, 130 decibels. That's like Scarface, you know?
Yeah.
And number one, there's a lot of money in convincing you that the above isn't true. Okay. We previously discussed how your brain will do everything it can to trick you into thinking you aren't really addicted to something. Or food company executives who depend on your money to pay for their private jets are taking full advantage of the fact. For example, Fox News recently ran a piece titled, "Junk Food Might Not Be Addictive After All." They interviewed a scientist who discussed a study he had conducted wherein rats were given junk food. And after the rat had engorged themselves to a ridiculous weight, the junk food was taken away and replaced with healthy food. Or rather than eat the healthy food, the rats chose to starve themselves for 2 weeks. And the rats would even intentionally subject themselves to electric shocks to get the junk food, even though the health food could have been eaten without enduring a painful burst of electrocution. You may recognize this as, oh, the textbook definition of addiction. Imagine that.
Yeah.
And however, you want to read that?
Well, we're running out of time.
I just want to finish this because it's not very long. However, the scientists conclude the interview by saying that technically the food didn't have the exact same chemical effect in the rat's brain as addictive drugs. So the headline became, junk food might not be addictive. See, market analysts know that once something is generally considered to be addictive, people will actively prevent their children from being exposed to it. And the entire business model of major food companies is to get you chemically dependent on their product from early childhood. So as long as fast food chains and soft drink corporations and the like keep dumping billions of dollars into advertising deals with mass media conglomerates, we're likely to see this information continue to be downplayed or flat out ignored for years to come. Might as well go have a Coke and smile.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. All right, there it goes, folks. Imagine that. The Coke dealers deal with the Coke. You know what I mean?
We've come right to the end of our show.
Yeah, we have.
So that was quite an article, Leo.
Wasn't that good?
Oh, my. It's really discouraging.
It's freaky,
though.
Isn't it?
But thanks for being with us tonight, folks. We really appreciate it.
That's why you're addicted to potato chips there.
Yeah, I know.
Even though you have no other addiction in the world, you're addicted to potato chips. And that's why
we don't buy them anymore. It took years to get off those kettle chips. Those kettle chips were horrible.
All right, those damn things. But anyway, we're done with those. So we have no more addictions. All right.
The thought of them makes me want them. But anyway, thanks for being with us. I actually
stopped smoking 6 months ago, so I haven't smoked a cigarette.
And you haven't been eating potato chips.
I don't eat cereal, not in a month. So we're off that stuff too. So for everybody out there, bear with us, stay with us, and join us. Join me tomorrow when I venture into the esoteric realm. Good night, everybody.
Good night, folks. Have a good night.